Everyone, welcome to Sword and Laser, episode number 18. I'm Veronica Belmont.
Lucky 18. I'm Tom Merritt.
Is that a lucky number in some cultures?
I am sure there has got to be one culture somewhere in the universe.
In the culture of the sword and laser.
Well, let's break it down. 18 is 6 by 3, right?
Yeah.
3 is a holy number.
Oh. And then
6
and
is
six
an
is
evil
two
number.
Threes, but six
oh, but
is
6
two
is 2
threes.
Threes, so we break it down even farther. It's 3 cubed.
That's special.
No, it's not. That's 27.
Wait, what? Math?
3 times 2 times 3.
We are digressing already,
yeah,
and we are not even 45 seconds into the show yet.
And we're already into numerology that I'm not even doing well.
So we are reading Dune right now. We have both actually finished. So if you haven't finished reading the book yet, you should probably maybe not listen.
We fooled you. Sorry.
We finished fast this time.
Yeah, well, I've read it twice before.
Oh.
And on the third reading, I have to say, things gelled. I remember the first time I read Dune, it was tough. Like, because you got all these new terms he's throwing at you, and he writes as if you are part of the universe, right? So all these things are assumed that you're like, what the heck is that? But the third time through here, I was like, oh yeah, I know what that is. I know what that is. And the story just pops out a lot more.
I got that sense when I first started the book that it was going to be one of those I'm just going to throw you right into my universe kind of books. And we've dealt with that before. What other book did we talk about that a lot? Oh, Anathem.
That one book?
Anathem.
By that guy, Neal Stephenson.
Yeah. No. Yes. Yes.
Yes. No.
Buy, sell,
yes,
buy.
No, Anathem is a total representation of that. And I like that because I really feel more immersed in a universe that way.
Right.
When they're not constantly pointing out things for me like, and the scoobledy-what, which is what the gnomes used to, you know, it's like, you know what, just say the scoobledy-what and give me enough clues that I can figure it out on my own. And then I feel like I'm really reading history.
Mm-hmm. I got into it right away. I mean, this was my first time reading, unlike yourself. And I loved it. I mean, once I got into it, I just couldn't put it down, which was good because I was on 2 10-hour plane flights recently.
That helps.
So that made the trip a lot better. And I thought it was fantastic. There were so many things thrown in there, though, that I recognized from, like, popular culture.
Yeah, like what?
Just, like, okay, well, this is kind of stupid, but and I'm probably mispronouncing it, but Shai Hulud, you know, the worms.
I think that's how I pronounce it. I don't know if that's right, but yeah, yeah.
That is a hardcore band that I used to listen to when I was in high school. And I'm like, oh, of course.
I
metal
think there's
bands
probably,
love fantasy books.
Totally. I think there's a lot of metal bands probably name themselves that are after little bits of Dune. I'm sure there's a Moadib band out there somewhere. And,
oh, there's got to be.
And some Fremen bands.
We'll get more on that later.
Jabbar.
I actually have a really funny link to talk about.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. can you imagine naming your band Gom Jabbar?
We pronounce things totally different. See, this is one of those instances where you really need one of those glossaries.
Yeah.
I mean, did it even have a glossary?
It has a glossary at the end. Actually, Engineer Chick said in the Real Deal chat today that Dune was one of the books that made her realize that you can enjoy a book that requires a glossary. But yeah, there's a terminology back at the back, but it doesn't have a pronunciation guide.
Okay. All right. Because I was saying Gom... I forget how I was pronouncing it.
Jabber?
Gom Jabber.
That's how he says it where I'm from, in Southern Illinois. Gom Jabber.
I always pronounce things incorrectly that I read in books.
Well,
it's really embarrassing.
Know, I don't know how to pronounce any of this stuff either. I am going solely on what I have heard in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and there
yeah.
Are two,
that's, I haven't
two
seen
movies.
The movie either, so that's another reason why.
That's the only place where I'm getting any clues. I haven't never read any of Frank Herbert's works where he describes how you're supposed to pronounce any of this stuff.
Hey, Sting is in the Dune movie, right?
The David Lynch one, the one that David Lynch took his name off of after they cut it all to hell.
Oh.
Yeah, it has Sting, and it also has Kyle MacLachlan.
Wow. Wait, which one should I rent then from Netflix? The original one or the...
If you are going to watch the David Lynch one, make sure you get the director's cut. Do not watch the monstrosity that was the feature release in the United States, because it's unintelligible.
And then that's not the miniseries, though, right?
No, then there's the sci-fi miniseries. Now, the sci-fi miniseries, I liked the first time I saw it because it is miles better than the feature film.
Mm-hmm.
But I just rewatched it, and I was kind of disappointed. Like, some of the acting's not so good. Some of the parts drag. They have Paul Moadib as a really angry youth. And I feel like in the book, he's very wide-eyed. He's very sort of innocent in a way until everything goes down in Arrakis and he gets thrown out into the desert. And that's when he has his revelation and he becomes the strong Paul and the angry Paul. And it's much more dramatic transition. In the movie, they made him angry the whole way through. So then when he got angry later, you're like, oh yeah, he's just kind of a brat, you know?
Well, I wish I'd known we were going to talk about the movie so much. I would have rented them before the show, but I'll have it for the next episode. I'll make sure I watch it.
I have the miniseries. You can borrow it.
Oh, sweet. Okay. Excellent. Have you read any of the books that came afterwards, like Children of Dune?
I have. I have read all 5 of the sequels twice.
What?
Yes.
You really are the biggest nerd I know.
I started reading Dune Messiah, which is the second one after Dune, right after I was so like, oh, I want more. So I started reading Dune Messiah, which is the second one, which isn't as good as some of the other, as like Children of Dune or they're sort of, I think of them as two trilogies too, because it's Dune Messiah and Children of Dune, which is all Paul. And then there's, God Emperor of Dune, Chapter House Dune, and I'm forgetting the other one.
Do they follow a linear storyline, or do they go back in time at all?
No, they follow a linear storyline, but what happens is there's a child that comes into play in Children of Dune. Actually, I think it might come into play in Dune Messiah. And there's a big gap in time between the end of book 3 and the beginning of book 4.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to spoil that too much, but the child starts off book 4 somehow.
Okay.
And it's like 1,000 years later, so you get this huge gap. Wow. Now, what's happened since is Brian Herbert, Frank Herbert's son, and a guy named Ken Anderson have gone into Frank's notes because he apparently kept notes for all the backstory and future story that he never got around to writing. And they have written a ton of sort of what I call expanded universe stuff.
Nice. I'm going to have to get into that, though, because I really felt like the book ended unfinished for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think he had conceived of it originally as a single book, but he definitely leaves a door wide open to know, you know, to be like, well, what happens next?
Mm-hmm.
It's a tiny little package at the end where he's got the emperor put in his place and he's, you know, had the marriage and solved the problem. But you're still wondering, like, what about Sean?
What happens? Yeah.
And, you know, what about the jihad that he's been fearing? Is that going to happen? All that stuff.
So we did have some comments from the folks in the Sword and Laser Ning forum. Terp Kristen had a little trouble getting into it. Terp said, I suppose I could start a group for Dune, but I'm having a heck of a time trying to get into the book. I finally bought it after much waffling. I love waffling. I wanted to get it on my Kindle, but it doesn't seem to be coming anytime soon. I was shocked about that myself, actually.
That was so weird, because you could... Yeah, you could go to it and it would say, like, buy this on your Kindle. And then you'd click on it and be like, out of stock or not available. I'm like, how do you get out of stock on a digital copy?
Right. Goes on to say, I'm about 50 pages in and have never seen the movie, so much like me, which some will probably say is a good thing. I'm getting bored by all the introduction of the characters. If it doesn't pick up soon, I may abandon it. If there's one thing this group has taught me that I didn't know before, it's that I definitely seem to prefer the swords to the lasers.
And I do feel like Dune qualifies as one of those books that's kind of both sword and laser, because he's trained in this knife fighting, you know? So I guess it's knife and laser, not sword and laser. But there is a lot of, and there's a lot of feudal aspects to the houses and all of that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it definitely, when they're on planet, it feels like more of a fantasy-type book, until you get to the stuff with the shields and with the ships landing on the planet and just knowing that people are orbiting around in space. So, yeah, it can definitely go both ways.
It's a great balance, though, where you're like, how did they get all this technology and yet get such a backward society?
Mm-hmm.
And they make some references to that in the book.
Yeah, I just really... One thing I didn't understand, too, is when this is supposed to take place. When and where. Because I guess I didn't realize it until afterwards when I was going through some of the index stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're talking about, you know, the planet and Keyes's writings and the religious background of a lot of the people in the world. And so it does seem to be super in the future in our timeline.
Yeah, I think that's definitely right. I mean, there is a reference to old Earth at one point, and so you know, like
the OC Bible,
right,
and the Sunnis,
the development of the OC Bible in Hawaii, essentially, I think is what they because he says something about the Sandwich Islands, I think, or something. But yeah, it's from all the stuff I've read, Earth is long in the past at this point. And if you want sort of the rough backstory, there's a great advance in human technology. They go out, they colonize tons of planets,
terraform.
And then the machines become artificially intelligent and take over. And I'm actually reading that book right now, The Butlerian Jihad, which is a prequel. And so there's a big war between machines and men.
Oh, suddenly it's Battlestar Galactica?
And then the men win, humans win, and they ban any kind of artificial intelligence. And so that's what sets you up for the world of Dune and why it's so backward with these shields and the weird spice navigators who are the only people who can fly ships and the mentats that are like human computers, because there is now a big taboo against any kind of artificial intelligence. So they can have technology, but there's like,
no,
you can
AI.
Never
yeah.
have AI again, because that will lead to our own destruction.
Such a common thread, the man versus machine.
Yes.
Throughout history. I mean, just so many books that we read are based on that. I mean, I guess it's kind of a cornerstone of science fiction, really, when you get down to it. I mean, like, it seems to always come back to that. Interesting.
I think, yeah, we fantasize in fear about machines.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's what we are not. It's the exact opposite of what we are at the core of our beings. And so it's both alien and familiar because we've built it. But
yeah, exactly. It's the fascination that we created it.
Exactly. So then we had other stuff, another quote from the forums, this one from Sean. And he says, one thing I love about Dune is the great quotes it provides. And one of them is, a beginning is the time for taking the most delicate care that the balances are correct.
Yeah, I like that one a lot. And then this other one, he says, for some reason he imagines Gurney Halleck sounding like Groundskeeper Willie.
So really?
I'm not going to try to say it that way. But Gurney says, mood's a thing for cattle, or making love, or playing the balisette.
Groundskeeper Willie.
Mood's a thing for cattle, or making love, or playing the balisette, Homer. Or Bart. He'd be saying that.
And then the last one that he liked. I must not fear. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is the little death that brings total obliteration. I will face my fear. I will permit it to pass over me and through me. And when it has gone past, I will turn the inner eye to see its path. Where the fear has gone, there will be nothing. Only I will remain. And I remember that from the book. I remember reading that quote and it being really poignant at that time. You know, I was like, wow. And I've actually, since then, that quote has come to mind in, like, real life.
Oh, yeah. I actually have this memorized. And
really?
I use it from time to time, and it actually works.
No, it calms
you down.
It's totally true. It does. It's like, all right, this feeling right now is temporary. This will pass, and when it's gone, I'll be myself again. You know, that's kind of what it is at the root of it.
I use it quite often at the dentist. Because you're in a situation you can't do anything about. You just need to let it all wash over. And I actually have it as my slogan on my computer when it starts up, too.
Really?
fear. Just the fear is the mind.
I didn't know you were such a Dune nut.
I used to be a huge Dune nut. Yeah. Now that sounds like a snack item. Dune nuts.
Dune nuts. Got a little piece of sand in there, though. It's not
great. They're spicy.
Oh, God. Tastes like cinnamon.
Little bit. Josh Lawrence, the composer of the Sword and Laser theme that we use at the beginning of the show, posted that there was a bizarre movie adaptation planned before David Lynch's 1984 film. Director Alejandro Jodorowsky made a name for himself in underground avant-garde circles in the 60s and 70s with films like El Topo and The Holy Mountain. He had gotten a production team together that include H.R. Giger, who's the guy who, if you don't know, amongst his many other artworks, did The Alien from Alien.
Yeah, his artwork is really, really creepy and beautiful and... like mechanical yet human. Then goes back to that again, you know, it's got like almost sci-fi elements built into it in a very creepy way. If I don't really know how else to describe it.
That's pretty good, actually. He was going to design the Harkonnen homeworld of Giddy Prime. Chris Foss, another famous sci-fi illustrator, was going to design the spacecraft. And French sci-fi comic book artist Mobius, who I don't know, was designing the costumes and other aspects of the film's visual look. Dan O'Brannon was to handle the special effects team. And believe it or not, Salvador Dali was signed on to play the Emperor.
What? That sounds like the most awesome movie ever.
I know, but it just kind of it fell apart.
I want them to remake this now. I want them to remake this movie again.
It was going to be different than the book, though. And Jodorowsky's quote that Josh put here: "In my version of Dune, the Emperor of the Galaxy is insane. He lives on an artificial gold planet in a gold palace built according to not laws of anti-logical. He lives in symbiosis with a robot identical to him. The resemblance is so perfect that the citizens never know if they are opposite the man or the machine."
Okay, well, that goes beyond their own universe's rules and laws.
Well, yeah, exactly. It kind of violates the whole premise of the
God,
universe.
God, Josh, pay attention.
Yeah, really.
What, you even read the book? Jeez.
Read a book.
Lawrence.
It sounds like a pretty amazing film. It's too bad. Maybe it's too bad it never got made, or maybe the movie we're imagining would have gotten made is much better than the one that would have.
Isn't that always the way it is, though?
Yeah, maybe it's best this way.
Yeah. And then, let's see, Shimmer thought that the sentence structure was a little wacky. He says, "I find myself having to reread some to understand what is being said. I mean, the first few pages, though, I might just need to get into the rhythm." So I had a funny thing with this in a way. When I first started reading the book, it was one night before bed, and I was sitting there reading it. And for some reason, I thought it would be really funny to, like, read it out loud to Ryan.
Boy.
I was like... This is, you know, having never picked up the book before in my life. I'm like, "Oh, no, it'll be fun. I'll read it to you." And he's like, "No, please don't." And I'm like, "No, I'll read it to you. It'll be really fun." I got like two lines in where they started hitting me with these words that I had no idea how to understand. And I was trying to do like different voices for Paul and his mother and for the old woman. And I got about half a page in and I'm like, "Yeah, I have to stop right here. I can't do this anymore.
Let me guess. The line that you had to stop on was, "Is a Gamjabar something of Arrakis I must know before we go there?" He mouthed her strange words. "Gamjabar, Kwisatz Haderach."
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah. That's about
that. That just put a full stop on it, I can imagine.
Full stop. But so the funny link that I wanted to talk about earlier was we mentioned about how heavy metal bands love fantasy books, and it's actually true. Iron Maiden, for example, has a song called "To Tame a Land," and the whole song is about Dune, pretty much. I don't know the song. I'll have to try to find a clip of it and insert it into the show. But it is a land that's rich in spice, the sand riders and the mice that they call the Maudib. Is that how you say it? Maudib?
Maudib. 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 Yeah.
And then they say that word that you just said that I cannot pronounce, and I'm not even
going to. Kwisatzhadrach.
Yeah.
That's the best line from the Dune feature film that Lynch did, where they got the old crone coming in, and she just, like, screeches, "He is the Kwisatzhadrach."
Kwisatzhadrach. Kwisatzhadrach.
Just got to say it like that.
Yeah, so all the lyrics are about Dune, and it's really funny to read. And then Metallica has a song called The Call of Cthulhu. Of course, from Ride the Lightning. And that's the Lovecraft, you know, all about Cthulhu. And then we've got Blue Oyster Cult, who did a song called Black Blade. And the little thing is, the little blurb about it says, Blue Oyster Cult went one step further than any other band with this one. Not only is Black Blade based on Michael Moorcock's Elric novels, Michael Moorcock himself wrote the lyrics.
That's sweet.
So they actually got the author to write the words to the song, which is rad. And then,
you know, Led Zeppelin has, I don't know if it's in here. Is it in here? Led Zeppelin has a song based on Tolkien.
Yeah. You know, actually, they don't mention the Led Zeppelin song, but what they do mention is a band called Blind Guardian, who did a whole album called Nightfall on Middle Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And
nice.
It's based on the Cimmerillion.
Oh, wow. Now that's hardcore.
So it's an entire album based on the Cimmerillion. And yeah, of course there is that Led Zeppelin song where they talk about the hobbits. And
that's like basing an entire album on the glossary from Dune.
Yeah, pretty much. And then they say Megadeth, Five Magics. He says, this is admittedly the most tenuous connection of all. Years ago, as a geeky middle schooler, I picked up a copy of the now out-of-print Del Rey paperback called Master of the Five Magics by Lyndon Hardy, persuaded that it had to have inspired the Megadeth song Five Magics. The song does seem to be, like the book, about an apprentice wizard, though I have no proof of any further connection. But he did like the novel.
It's possible.
It's possible. You never know.
There's an alien on the cover of Rust in Peace, though, so I'm not sure where that fits in.
Maybe not. Maybe not.
Maybe not. You know, maybe loosely, like, read the book and then was writing a song and just stole some ideas but really didn't base it.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly. I don't know.
But yeah, Megadeth, but then, like I said, there's a whole band called Shai Hulud, and I don't know if they have any songs based on Dune, but I'm going to have to go back and listen. But they're really hardcore.
Do you want to start a band called the Sardaukar?
No, we have to call it the... The
Kwisatzhadrach.
The Kwisatzhadrach. Kwisatz and the Haderachs.
That's hilarious.
I want to be Kwisatz.
Yeah. Well, hey, there's a song based on the Sword and Laser.
Ah, speaking of, yes, right?
That was a good segue. Are you proud of me?
Well done.
Hold on. I have to pull up the blog post, though.
CliveRoyalProject.com. The URL is CliveRoyalProject.com. It starts off with the headline, "Join my internet band or perish in obscurity." And he is asking people to take three songs that he wrote, download the mixer voice track, remix the crap out of it. He says shit. Host it and post it.
His words, and, not ours.
And then he says, we've created something beautiful. Two of the song, one song's called The Road, one song's called The Ocean, but the third song, it's actually the middle song on his site, is called The Sword and Laser.
Yeah, and it's rad. It's really good.
It's actually called Sword and the Laser.
The Sword and the Laser. Well, he was probably worried about you know, trademark infringement.
Yeah, he doesn't need to be.
We'll come after you. And he's Alden O'Neill on Twitter if you guys want to follow him and check up on the Clive Royal project and see how that's all going. But I'm really curious to see what people remix, if anyone's done anything yet.
You've got to hear this. Are we going to put it at the end of the show?
I can put it at the end of the show, yeah, or I can insert it. We just started using Wiretap Studio for the podcast recording. I don't know. I can't change inputs midstream, so I'll have to do it. I'll have to do it after. I'll put it at the end of the show.
Just put that way we can put the whole thing. You've got to listen to it. It's amazing. It is a rock anthem for the Sword and the Laser.
Eat your heart out, Josh Lawrence.
I know. Josh, you have been served.
Oh, I'm just kidding.
And now it's on. Actually, Josh says he's going to be remixing. He started a thread at the Ning Forum at swordandlaser.ning.com saying, hey, I'm going to remix this. You know, anybody else out there going to give it a shot? So if you're into it, you might want to hook up with Josh. share some ideas.
We are all up in the remixing action these days.
I know, thanks to Clive.
Look at us go.
Project.
So, hey, what are you reading these days now that you finished Dune?
Well, I mentioned earlier I'm reading The Butlerian Jihad by Kevin Anderson. And The Butlerian Jihad tells the story of how the humans revolted against the artificial intelligence.
Okay, right.
So, and in addition to that, you get some nice clues to the origins of things that are well developed in Dune. So the society that eventually founds the Bene Gesserit shows up. The free men of Dune are out and about in the desert trying to survive. They don't have still suits yet. They don't know about the worms or the spice or anything. So you get to learn a little bit about how they develop.
See, I was pronouncing it while I was reading it. I was pronouncing it as Freeman. But do they say in the movie Fremen?
Fremen, yeah. Fremen? Okay. In the movies they say Fremen, but it's definitely based on free men. Because they escape from not only the machine worlds, but also the League of Nobles is what the free humans are called. Mm-hmm. They escape from both of them because they're Zensuni, and Zensunis are oppressed. So they go to Arrakis, and they call themselves the Free Men of Dune.
So that's another thing. So Zunis and being on a place called Arrakis.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, Zunis and Arrak?
Yeah, you know what? We should have touched on this though. Frank Herbert says that he essentially wrote Dune because he was reading about the oil crisis, and the fact that oil was such a powerful thing because of its rarity, and being in the Middle East, to put him in mind of the rarity of water and its importance in a dry climate like that. And so that kind of fed his ideas, his ecological ideas. I was reading there's a book you can buy that's a compilation of several notes and short stories and things that led into Dune. I think it's called The Story of Dune. And in there is an article he wrote about the ecology of taking sand dunes and planting them to preserve them and fix them so that you can reclaim land. And this is a big problem in the Sahara, where the dunes are expanding all the time. And so they were trying this in Oregon. We're hopefully going to use it in the Sahara to stop the spread of the dunes. It was rejected by everywhere he wanted to publish it. But he eventually took all of that research and turned it into Dune.
Hmm. Wow.
And so that's where we get the idea of Kine's plan of planting grasses to fix the dunes and eventually turning the climate of the planet around.
Interesting. Hey, you know what other thing is based on the oil wars?
What is that?
Dinosaurs. The old show.
Was it really?
It's all based on big oil companies.
Oh, I didn't know that. I honestly didn't know that.
Yeah, it's actually out there. It's not just a guess that people have made based on stuff they talk about on the show. The creators actually based the whole Sinclair family on, you know, people who ran big oil companies. And
Sinclair gas stations back in the day, so it must be that, right?
I think one of the people that owned one of the big oil companies' last name was Sinclair, one of the main oil tycoons.
I think it was the Esso gas stations were Sinclair Oil or something.
Yeah, and then like the grandma's Ethel. Ethel Sinclair.
Yeah.
Who was also the name of a woman that lived in or that was part of a big oil company, but also Ethel Oil and whatnot.
Right.
Not really relevant to what we were talking about, but kind of.
No, but definitely kind of, because, I mean, dinosaurs are, you know, a lot of times that's what you think of. Oil is made of old organic material like dinosaurs, although probably not.
Well, they play on that in the show apparently as well. So right now I'm reading Demon.
You're reading our next book already?
Well, what happened was is I was in Heathrow Airport, and I was like, I need a new book to read. And I was looking around, and I saw all the other Frank Herbert novels. And I'm like, I don't think I'm really ready to continue reading this right now. And then I went to the bestseller list, and what was sitting there but Demon by Daniel Suarez, which we talked about in the last episode as being a really good potential next book for us. It's great. I mean, I'm almost finished. I probably have another 50 pages left. But it pretty much combines everything in the geek universe.
Wow. I can't wait to read it from what you've said. I mean, it's for sure going to be our next book. And you're plowing through it at a great rate. I'm I'm about to take a 10-hour flight myself, so I'll probably be plowing through it at a great rate as well.
Well, I gotta say, I mean, it covers hacking, it covers MMOs and first-person shooters, botnets, pretty much anything that we talk about on a day-to-day basis doing either one of our full-time jobs.
Yeah, right.
Shows up in this book, and they just drop jargon like nobody's business. I mean, the stuff he says, and he's writing code on the pages sometimes. And you just read it, and RSS feeds, and keyword search terms, and it's really, really incredible to see. And it absorbs you into the story so much as a geek, too, because you're like, oh, wow, he's really speaking my language. I really understand what's going on. I feel like I'm involved in this in some way. I feel like if this were really happening in my life, I would probably be involved with this, maybe not on the good side.
How does it compare to like Snow Crash or one of the early Neal Stephenson novels? Because that's how I felt about Snow Crash when I first read it. Mm-hmm. But the world that it was describing was not as huge as the world that Suarez is describing. I mean, the internet is blown up. It is everywhere. And right. Everybody seems to be talking tech.
You know, I'm a little concerned that the book will probably become dated pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. Just because he is so specific about the technology that he's talking about, you know, in 5 years, things could be totally different.
Right.
So that's the one issue that I see with this book. In terms of Snow Crash, I mean, it's kind of the same in that respect, because reading Snow Crash now, you kind of feel like it was written in its time.
Yeah.
And looking back on it, you're like, oh, man, really?
Avatars.
Seriously, guys? But at the same time, it's still a really good read, and it's also a total thriller.
Yeah.
So there's things, I think, that will keep people coming back to it even after the technology becomes a little bit dated.
Cool. Well, I'm excited to read it. So obviously, thedaemon.com, that's D-A-E-M-O-N is the URL if you want to get the scoop directly from the author's website. Right. It's available in print or in digital editions. Because he didn't have a publisher for a long time, so you can just get it.
Right. If I remember the story correctly, I mean, he was either a programmer or he was an independent systems consultant to Fortune 1000 companies. And so he is actually a software designer and software writer and a gamer, for that matter. And so I don't think he's really written much before. And he tried to get the book out, and people weren't really biting, but then they finally did, and I think he's going to be, he's really Crichton-esque. You know, like, I read this book, and I feel like I'm reading Michael Crichton in a way, and a lot of people say that as well. I mean, just a really techno-thriller.
In a very good way. Because sometimes people criticize Crichton for being pulp, because he put out so many titles, but his concepts were always amazing.
Exactly. I mean, Jurassic Park, come on, best book ever. Am I right?
I don't know if it was the best.
Come on, am I
ever.
Right? Come on.
Jurassic Park, Ulysses, Jurassic Park. I don't know.
Dinosaurs, man. It all comes back to dinosaurs.
It's coming. Today it is with you, man. You are all about the dinosaurs.
I would love to try to get him on the show, too. I mean, I think he would make a really great interview. So maybe we can try to do that at some point, too.
Yeah, let's do. I like that idea. Before we finish up here,
I do have a caveat though.
Oh, yes.
There is some sexually graphic material in the first part of the book. So if you're sensitive to that kind of thing, it's really no worse than when we were reading American Gods and we had that, you know, that sex scene in the very beginning. You remember what I'm talking about?
Yep, totally.
Yep, a little uncomfortable. Yep. So if you found that acceptable, if you could get through that and understand that the rest of the book isn't like that at all, then you should be okay. It was that one moment that's kind of like, whoa, really?
Yeah, that's the important part, I guess, is I was like, well, is the book like that? And you're like, no, it just happens and then it goes away.
Yeah, it's kind of a random chapter. I mean, it gives you a good viewpoint on the character that's involved in that scene. You get a sense for what kind of person he is in a big way. But you're not going to get a lot of that in the book. I mean, there's violence for sure, but nothing too graphic.
Okay, so it's sexy at first, then that goes away, and then you're left with a lot of violence. So if you don't like sex or violence, not your book.
I wouldn't call it overly gratuitous, though.
Okay, yeah. Good to know. All right. Let's finish up with the thread of the month. I just made that name up. I hope that's okay.
Sure.
Will started a thread February 24th, 2009, so it's actually the thread of a couple months, called Books with Both Sword and Lasers. And it's got a lot of great discussion about what we were talking about, books that kind of span the fantasy and science fiction realm. I am currently reading David Weber's Safehold series, says Will, Off Armageddon Reef by Schism Rent Asunder. That must be his real name. And soon to be released by Heresies Distressed. The military sci-fi combination of future Earth at war with aliens and the last human survivors living in a feudal society on Safehold, fighting with galley ships, swords and cannon, corrupt kings and church, a cybernetic avatar named Merlin. Can it get any better than this? Love it.
Yes. Yes. That sounds rad.
Yeah, very, very good stuff.
Like and pirates then, and cybernetic avatars named after famous magicians.
Right. I mean, what more do you need? It's hacking everything.
Merlin's not really a magician. He's a sorcerer, right?
I guess what we would like is for it to be well-written. That's what more we need. So I don't know about that. I'm assuming so, but
I haven't followed up with him. I don't know if he's actually gotten through with it yet.
Yeah, we'd like to hear back, Will, if you have. I'm looking down through the thread, and I don't see any more from him. But everybody else has been piling in there. Rick, Sean O'Hara, Hagelin, John Boone, the Justin Bot. A lot of people giving feedback either on the books mentioned or mentioning other books, like books by Richard Morgan, for instance, mm-hmm. whom I just discovered in the last few years. Starts off The Steel as a sword and sorcery tale about a retired warrior who's called back to action to free a relative who's been sold into slavery. But as it goes on, we learn that the strange fantasy creatures are really aliens, and zombies are actually parasites that take over corpses.
Of course.
See, it's got zombies and aliens.
Love it.
And swords.
Love it. I'm all over it.
So lots of good stuff in here.
Good fodder for later episodes and book selections for sure.
All right, let's do a quick giveaway then.
Ooh, I like giveaways. What do you have?
I have actually a copy of Frank Herbert's Dune in paperback. Now, this seems like a silly giveaway, right? Because you've read it, except we know some of you haven't.
I know. So you guys listen, but you don't read. It's okay.
We'll start a thread on the Ning forum to this giveaway. Tell us the past five books that you've read, and then after, let's give it, 30 days?
Sure.
Give it 30 days, or just give it to, like,
30 days is a long time. 30 days. Let's do May 1st. Yeah.
May 1st. Okay. You got until May 1st to do this. Go to ning.yahoo.com. I'll start the thread as soon as we're
recording. Ning.yahoo.com.
Where'd that come from? Ning.swordandlaser.com.
No, swordandlaser.ning.com.
Oh, yeah. That's right. They get the, yeah. Huh. I'm not good at this.
You need a nap and a juice.
I need a 13-hour flight to London.
Yeah.
Go to that place that she said and look for the thread that I am probably going to forget to start. And then tell us the last five books that you've read. And tell us anything else you want. And then we'll just draw on May 1st.
We'll just pick a random name.
You'll get the copy of Dune that I bought at the San Francisco airport because I had left mine at home.
Oh, that's too bad.
Which then gave me two copies.
All right. Well, I think that's it for this episode then. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you want to get in touch with us, the website is, of course, swordandlaser.com. And what is the Ning group?
It is swordandlaser.ning.com.
Thank you. And our email address is theswordandlaser@gmail.com. And we'll have another episode in another few weeks. I mean, I guess after you get back.
Yeah, I'll be back by May.
Will that be our we're finished demon, or will that be we're checking up in demon?
I'm thinking we might be finished by then.
Because I'm already done. I'm pretty much
done. And I have a feeling I'll race through it.
It's a fast read. It's definitely a fast read. It's not a short book, but it's a fast read.
Long book, fast read.
Exactly. All right, you guys. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening.
Bye. There's a dog.